This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Dr. Tim Ball, former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg and one of the leading scientific voices calling into question the science behind the climate change movement. We want to get his thoughts on some of the latest issues to arise that increase skepticism about exactly what this climate change movement is all about. And Dr. Ball, it's always great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Greg, and thanks for the opportunity.
Well, it's kind of been a pattern here in recent weeks. First of all, just before the Copenhagen summit, which did not end with any major accord, there was, of course, the revelation of the East Anglia scientists refusing to include certain material that might move them away from their preferred conclusions. Now the United Nations Climate Change Panel has said that its conclusion was wrong about glaciers melting in the Himalayas. And this week we're finding out why, because the sources for that conclusion were a graduate thesis in Switzerland and anecdotal evidence from mountaineering guides in Switzerland. What do you make of these revelations?
Well, ClimateGate, which is the general term now used for the leaking of these emails at the Climatic Research Unit in East Anglia, occurred because the original science was flawed. So the basic argument that CO2, and particularly human CO2, is causing first warming and now climate change was wrong. And, of course, they presented that hypothesis. But instead of allowing the normal scientific process of other scientists challenging and questioning, they blocked that. They blocked the peer review. They controlled the IPCC. The people at the CRU controlled the major chapters in the IPCC reports. And, of course, what they were doing was building a dam against the actual evidence, and eventually a small leak began with these emails. And by the way, what's interesting is that the person who leaked them first sent, not all of them, but sent some of them to the BBC, to a person that had spoken about some of the problems with the climate science, and presumably thought that would get them out there. When it didn't occur, after 5 weeks, they sent them out, as they did through a Russian release agency. But what you're seeing now is that all of the leaks, more and more, as people delve into it and start to see what the extent of what these people were doing. And it's only just begun, Greg. It's going to continue. And, of course, one of the reasons is because the great value of the Internet is that it takes information to the public. It's the true democratization of information. So you've got a billion eyes looking at everything now. And that is enormously powerful, and that's what you're seeing.
But talk a little bit about the whole peer review process. Obviously, that's very important in scientific research, that others can replicate what scientists claim to have discovered and have proven. But if you have a group of scientists who are committed to a certain conclusion, how does that obscure any sort of competing theories that may be valid?
Well, the peer review process has been perverted. I mean, it's never done fully. I mean, somebody sent an article to review, and they don't check all of the math and all of the numbers. They just look at it in general terms and point out some possible errors. And the peer review process was completely corrupted by these people. Now, I had a suspicion 20 years ago that something was going on, because they started touting, oh, well, you know, if you haven't peer-reviewed, and if you're not publishing peer-review. And another one they use is, oh, well, if you're not a current researcher, that you're retired, for example, you got pushed aside. So it made me suspicious. But, of course, once we got the emails, we discovered that they were controlling the whole process. I referred to the peer review process years ago, particularly in climate science, but it's true of most disciplines. I call it peer review censorship. And, in fact, it creates a tunnel vision to perpetuate and block any new challenge or new idea. Because if I was to publish an article, and I did try to do this, saying, look, here's a problem. I've got a problem with this. The editor will look at the list and say, well, who are the experts of the prevailing wisdom? My article then goes to them, and, of course, they then say, oh, this is heresy, don't publish, and therefore they block it and control it. Well, the people at the CRU unit were doing this to the extent when Steve McIntyre, who broke down the hockey stick, finally found a journal that would publish. It was the Geophysical Research Letters, And they were angry enough, and they got the editor fired for publishing that article. So the peer review process, one of the problems with it is that it should be completely open. You should know who peer reviewed your articles. And the reason for that, even on a fundamental legal basis, is everybody has a right to confront their accusers. And basically a reviewer is saying, well, you've done this wrong and that wrong. Well, you surely have the right to make a rejoinder to that. And of course, the other problem, and I won't expand this too much, but Professor Wegman in his report to the National Academy of Sciences said that here was a group of 42 paleoclimate scientists who were not only publishing together, but peer reviewing each other's work.
We're talking with Dr. Tim Ball, former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg. And Dr. Ball, the issue has not only come up with these recent revelations, but also came up once again last week in the president's State of the Union message here in the U.S., where he basically said there was an overwhelming scientific evidence and consensus that climate change is real and that therefore we need to pursue his energy legislation. What do you sense is the overall public attitude now, maybe not only in the U.S., but across the board? Have these revelations seriously changed the numbers on what people think is really happening with our climate?
They've changed them at the general public level. If you look in Britain, I think they had a poll showing 80% are against it. But it hasn't changed it at the political level because the politicians are so committed to this as the basis, the IPCC reports as the basis for carbon taxes. And if you look at cap and trade, for example, and you go back to Obama's budget, it's a huge source of revenue to offset his massive budget deficit. And so from that perspective, they daren't let it go.
Do you think, though, we've seen the zenith of the pursuit of major policies, or will governments here and elsewhere try to keep pushing them until there's no gas left in the tank?
One of the problems, that particularly in the U.S., is that it really doesn't matter what the public want and what the politicians in the Senate and the Congress are reacting to, because one of the things Obama's already done is completely end-run that process by having the EPA list CO2 as a toxic substance, which then gives them authority to control industry completely. They can shut an industry down, and of course that's what Obama said he was going to do before he got elected. So you put in place the bureaucratic rules that effectively end-run the political process, and at some point, politicians have to listen to their constituents, and when they start to hear them saying, look, this is a bunch of nonsense, and I don't want this tax, and I'm not going to pay this tax, politicians do listen to that. But as I said, one of the things that's been going on is dealing with it through the bureaucracy, which is not accountable to the public.
Fascinating. Dr. Ball, another area to keep an eye on. Thanks so much for your time, as always.
Well, thank you, Greg. Thanks. I keep saying it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Dr. Tim Ball, former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg, one of the leading scientific voices raising serious concerns about the science behind the climate change movement. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.